This episode of Fermented Adventure the Podcast features Eleanor Leger of Eden Ciders. We had a tremendous time tasting and discussing Eden Ciders, the history of their cidery, and the cidery industry overall. Be sure to reach out to Eleanor and Eden Ciders and let them know what you thought about the podcast. Cheers! Ladies and gentlemen, craft spirit enthusiasts, and those interested in the intoxicating world of craft distilleries, cideries, meaderies, wineries, and the occasional foray into breweries. It's Rich Shane, and welcome to Fermented Adventure, the podcast, where we bring you the fascinating people that are making the mash, fermenting, distilling, bottling, pouring, and delivering to you some of the finest libations in the world. Before we get started, here are a few housekeeping items. Thank you for bringing the podcast into wherever you are and whatever you're doing. We truly are grateful that you have chosen to listen and make us part of your day. It would mean the world to us if you left a 5-star review. This helps us climb in the rankings, and it makes it easier for others to find us. Don't hesitate to leave us your comments as well. If the podcast didn't meet your expectations, tell us why. We're always striving to improve. You can find us at fermentedadventure.com. We are on Instagram and Facebook as Fermented Adventure. Email us at fermentedadventure@gmail.com. All right, FA Nation, let's meet our guests. She's Eleanor Leger. I'm Rich Shane. This is Fermented Adventure, the podcast. And today we have the pleasure of interviewing Eleanor and Eden Cider. Eleanor, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're coming to me from Vermont, which I'm sure as the area warms up, it's become more beautiful and spring-like. The apples are, the buds on the trees are starting to bloom. Talk about, for those that are not familiar with Eden Cider and your cidery in Vermont, how did all that get started for you?
Well, I have to stop you on one thing because, no, we just had another foot of snow. The buds are nowhere near breaking. For us, that happens the third week of May.
Okay.
And we live in a beautiful winter wonderland right now. It's absolutely gorgeous. Everything's got this clean coat of white over it with, you know, red barns and hills and granite mountains and pine trees. And it's absolutely gorgeous. And spring is actually quite disgusting. We call that mud season.
I've heard that. So, you know, here's the thing.
This is the world of Vermont, my terroir.
I look out my window and everything's starting to bloom. And I say, wow, Vermont must be like that too. But you do have mud season. I forgot all about that.
Yeah. All right. And a very short growing season.
Now that you cleared that up for everybody, how did Eden Cider get started?
Well, so it's related because we're very far north in Vermont. Also, we're like 8 miles from the border with Canada. And in fact, when you drive up the dirt road to our place, your phone will bing and say, welcome abroad.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Even though you're not yet. So my husband's French Canadian, and we went to Montreal the Christmas time in like December 2006. And there was this guy in the Marché Atwater, François Pouliot, who was pouring ice cider. And we taste it. We looked at each other and go, wow, this is amazing. And nobody's like really making a thing of this in Vermont. Like cold weather, lots of interesting apple varieties. We can do that incredibly well. You can believe like the best ice cider in the world should come from Vermont. Like other things, maybe not so much, but like that, we could do that as good as anybody. And we're like, okay, well, let's just make some in our basement. So we did. We made more than we could drink ourselves. And so I got a license so I could see if anybody else wanted to drink it. And we visited some restaurants and we were sold out in a month and a half, and then they wanted more. And so we're like, okay, we'll make another batch next winter. So we did. We sold that. And about 6 years in, we decided it probably was a real business and we should pay attention to it. But yeah, there was no grand design. It was one thing led to another. And here we are.
It's like 6 years. Bam. Here we are now. But there must have
been 15.
Yeah. No, I mean, but there must have been at the time. Just, I mean, you and Albert both have your own careers. And, you know, the idea that this is a hobby. Look, I can say when we go to the bottle share, we always, it's funny how that hook is the ice cider, because everybody raves about the ice cider. And I think it's almost like that gateway drug to the rest of the ciders that you make, because then, wow, those are great too. But did you have at the time, did either you or Albert have any experience in owning an orchard? And doing none of that.
No. So, really the whole thing got started because I had left a job in corporate America at the time after like 20 some years and was like, oh, I'm not sure what I really want to do next. And so basically I was unemployed and, had too much time on my hands and this is what happened. And so I have not, I mean, this has been my career since 2007.
It been like? So talk about that journey from, okay, we're going to pivot here. People love our ice cider to beginning, you know, to open up a cidery. You know, what was that? What has that been like from the beginning for you and Albert?
Yeah, well, when we started in 2007, cider was not a thing. I mean, there was a woodchuck in the grocery store, but that was about it. And we were very much in the dessert wine business. Right. The only people who could really move any volume of ice cider were large fancy restaurants in urban areas that had dessert wines by the glass on their list, where it was really easy to say, oh, you've got like Sauternes, Tokaj, Late Harvest Riesling, get the North American origin, awesome dessert drink. Here it is. And they'd be like, yes. So we were pretty quickly outside of Vermont into Boston and New York and DC, you know, back in like 2009, 2010. And then, you know, Angry Orchard came in, Boston Beer, and all of a sudden cider was a thing. And meanwhile, we had really discovered all of these heirloom apples we were working with and learned some, not enough, still not enough about, you know, all the sort of characteristics that they bring when you ferment them and blend them and do all kinds of stuff. We were like, you know, I bet we could make a pretty good dry cider too. And because we were small and didn't have money, big budgets for equipment and all kinds of stuff, we started our first foray out of ice cider was like champagne method dry cider, because you can make that in your basement without any fancy equipment. The whole like secondary fermentation, disgorging, all that kind of stuff, you can do that by hand. So that was the Brut Nature that we do was the sort of first foray into that. And that still to this day is one of my favorite ciders that we make.
It still seems, because hearing your journey about where when you started, there was really nothing in the cider industry. You've been a steward, a caretaker of the industry almost from its inception to where we are today. Do you, I mean, with what you do with the American Cider Association and being their board president to your, you know, the Vermont Cider Makers Association, do you get a sense of that role that you play in what you've now, the ripples across the pond and what you've done to affect so many different lives in this country?
Wow, that sounds really amazing. And I don't feel it, I guess, in that same way. I mean, I've had a lot of company, a lot of great people along the way. And I, you know, I have to say when I got started, there were already wonderful people already doing wonderful things. I mean, Steve Wood, Diane Flint, Autumn Stoczek, Dan Wilson, in terms of people that, you know, were trying to sort of, we're making fabulous cider and trying to get the world to recognize it as a worthy beverage that they should pay attention to. So it's been a merry little band trying to try that path. I think when it comes to the associations, because I have this professional corporate background, it's been, you know, I don't bring to the cider industry a wealth of experience in the wine world or the beer world or, you know, super in-depth, not, you know, I'm not a court of master sommeliers or whatever. What I do bring is this understanding of, you know, business and technology and process and how kind of the world works. And so, and organizational capabilities. And so my contribution has been from like, this is how I think I can help, you know, let me help organize things and think about strategically, you know, what makes sense and how do we, And very much from the point of view of wanting us to be a successful industry as a whole, including inclusive, right? Including all types of cider and all types of cider makers and all types of people who enjoy cider. So that's really, been my passion for my involvement.
Talk about the learning process as far as putting, or putting together an orchard, putting trees in the ground, learning that, as you said, Vermont, you're up here, the highest point until you get to Canada. What's that all been like for you and even cider?
It's been a front row seat to climate change. It's been just dramatic. When we were first there, like ice cider, we need lots of good cold weather to make ice cider. It's all naturally done outdoors in the winter, right? And we were in zone 3B, which is characterized by the average lowest temperature across here. The lowest temperature on average is minus 35. And for the first 5 or so years, 2007, 8 to 2012, we would normally hit minus 35 at least once a winter. And we'd have a stretch, a week at minus 20s and lots of time in the zero range. And making ice cider was just easy. It's like press the juice, stick it outside. We could do that in December and it would be cold enough. The average high temperature in January for our area is 16. So, that was what we saw. And since 2012, it's just been a complete change. We had about 4 days to make ice cider this year. And so we didn't, we froze some stuff, but it didn't quite freeze as much as we would have liked. So our yield is much less and we're kind of scrambling to figure out what to do about that. I don't know if next year we'll be able to do it. Basically, if we ever have cold enough weather, we'll just make a lot because it's going to have to last us till the next time we have cold enough weather, if that ever comes. So sorry to derail the conversation, but unbelievably dramatic.
I think it's an extremely important part of the conversation because look, you said you have a front row seat to climate change. And, as an orchard, starting an orchard as somebody that now has to look at your product, which is from the earth. If the apples don't grow or you can't get the production methods that you want to make what you do, certainly you're going to pivot. But now I think you're looking at maybe different. You have to stop and say what apple varietals will now grow here, what will grow better.
Right. The good news is there are lots of stuff we couldn't grow because we were too cold that we now can grow. So that's sad but true,
Yeah, I guess, that's fundamentally important because you can now create these other ciders that at the time, Vermont may not have been able to see these apples. And, how has that been for you? It opens up the palate, but closes another box, doesn't it, in a way?
So I think that the other part of our journey when it comes to apples is, we planted trees 2008, 9, and 10. Not a whole lot, about 1,000. And our management of those trees has been holistic from the beginning. So think biodynamic, we make our own compost. We're not spaying anything out of a bucket or a bag from Monsanto or DuPont or whatever. We make compost teas. We spray neem oil. It's all about the mycorrhizae fungi and the symphony of living things in the ecology of our orchard. And we're really passionate about that. And we're trying to, this orchard has never been the majority of our production, right? Because we obviously were making ice cider in 2007 from apples we were buying from other orchards in Vermont. And our whole mission is supporting small scale orchards because Vermont has a lot of topography. If you go out west to Washington State, you can have 11,000 acres all sort of in one fell flat swoop. The largest orchard in Vermont is a couple hundred acres. And a lot of the history in Vermont is small farms. So you'll find, 20 trees that have been there for, or like Brad at Windfall Orchard, one of our partners. He's got 200 trees and they're 60 to 70 years old, and he's got 80 different varieties, and the quality of the fruit is amazing and the varieties are incredible, and we get to work with them and it's fabulous. So, and like our Jessica Yates has seven Northern Spy trees that were planted in the 1930s. They're gorgeous. They're pretty biennial, but they produce fabulous fruit. We make a single variety Northern Spy Ice Cider from those apples. So you can tell this is what keeps me excited, right? Is supporting. We now have a network of 11 small orchards. 100% of the fruit that goes into all of our ciders, including our cans, is from Vermont. It's not sourced anywhere else. One exception for Steve Wood and Poverty Lane Orchard in New Hampshire, which he can probably throw an apple into Vermont from where he is. But point being, it's all about the growers and the trees and the varieties, and using our cider as a vehicle to, bring money in to support those orchards and those trees and those growers.
Well, you did say the cider industry is all inclusive. So Vermont can bring in a little bit of New Hampshire here and there, and they can be yeah, part of the state, right?
Yeah. And no, and I'm not meaning to take away from, my friend,
no,
other places who are buying, whatever. It's all part of the cider story. You've got that in every industry with diversity.
We got to spend time, Dawn and I got to spend time at CiderCon, and now I understand better why the weather at 4 degrees and -2 really wasn't bothering you too much while we're in Chicago. Right. That was like a warming trend for you, right?
Right.
What was CiderCon like for you this year? What was that experience like?
It was amazing. Like this year particularly just felt really good. I don't know whether it was just sort of the pandemic seeming like it's over and maybe not having to worry about that so much as we had the year before. I felt like, I guess a couple things really stuck out for me. One is just all of the new people getting into cider now, right? I mean, typically CiderCon every year is like 50% cideries and planning or new people or people thinking about it. But there are really people getting into cider. I mean, for a while, there were not a lot of new cideries happening. We had 4 new cideries start in Vermont just last year, which is like, on a base of 15, maybe, now we're like almost 20. and they're all really passionate. At least the new ones starting around here in New England are all really passionate about apples and varieties. And they are coming at it from a wine point of view and, spreading the word about what great cider can be. So I found that just really exciting. And I feel like the sessions were also well tuned to that interest. Like we had sessions on pet nats and spontaneous fermentation and things like that, which, the newer folks coming in are really interested in. So that was super exciting. And then the other thing was just Michelle McGrath, who's our executive director, and her team. They've been doing this for so long now, they just have it dialed in, and it just works like clockwork. Like everything just works. There was no, I don't know if that was your experience, but like it just.
I appreciate you say that, because I think that one of the things you touched on is the quality of the classes. We don't make cider. We enjoy cider. We're a consumer of cider. The more knowledge, I think, as a consumer, that you can gain about anything, whether it's wine or beer or in this case cider, the more you appreciate it. As you talked about the varietals that you can grow now, or the ones that you're using, or when you come across something that produces these beautiful apples from the 1930s, and you can connect with that. It just raises the enjoyment, the pleasure of it. So hearing these speakers and the knowledge and wisdom that people got to impart for a couple of days, for us as consumers is incredible. And listening to the conversations throughout the halls and the different rooms and the tastings, where people were sharing what they're working through, some of the challenges. Let's face it, you say 4 new cideries open in Vermont. That means 4 new businesses that have to deal with startup costs and bottles and all the things that are, the costs that are challenged to cideries today and what you deal with, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, the ability to stop and have that resource and say, for what the American Cider Association does, and say, hey, you and Albert started this in 2007 and you were doing some home stuff and you've taken some of those experiences and you can help people fail faster, as they say, that
we hopefully avoid some of the scars that we have. Yeah.
You've made some of those mistakes, but hey, listen, just so you know, hey, this is what we did. It didn't work or it didn't work for us. And then we learned how to change this, the yeast and all those things. But the one thing that resonated for Dawn and I was how much the quality of cider keeps getting better and better and better. And again, I say this as a consumer, wow, look how lucky we get, because this raises the bar on something that's already amazing. I kept saying, and I don't know if this is a conversation that you have with the board or people you meet, but the question that I get raised in my, it gets raised in my head is, why not cider? And when we go out to different places, I'll ask, what cider, if I don't see it or I don't see anything beyond maybe something more of a mass market cider, my question is, why not cider? All right, well, our customers aren't asking for it. Well, then why are you not why aren't you not educating? You bring it in and you educate, and then the more we all get educated, the more we're drinking this amazing, wonderful, delicious cider. So is that something that, what are the challenges there as far as why not cider?
Yes, that's the challenge. So we had kind of an aha moment at a meeting in New York this past summer where one of the folks in the group that we were with is a master creator of sommeliers. And he said, in studying for that, not only did I have to learn all the crazy stuff about wine, but I also had to learn about cocktails and I had to learn about sake because they might be part of a program in a sommelier, my role as sommelier, I'm going to need to know about those. Mm-hmm. And then he looks and goes, cider's not on the test.
Wow.
So it's not in the WSET tests. It's not, right? So, the folks who are coming up in the hospitality world who are going to be managing beverage programs, aren't being asked to learn about cider. So we need to do something about that because that's crazy.
Fascinating. I didn't know that would be there. And you stop and say, well, why, all right, it's a wine, it's a Japanese rice wine. I can say why, with the sake and all right, cocktails and, I'll be part of that program. But when you look at the history of cider, this is America's original beverage. It's original American craft beverage, right? I mean, that was there. Apples, they brought apples over, planted some trees.
Yeah. Yeah.
Took some of these unique wild growing fruits and started making different ciders out of them. All right, we need to change this. We're going to do this now.
I personally prefer to leave out, to not spend time thinking about the history of colonial invasion in North America as being the origin story of cider. And I like to focus on cider now and what it's going to be in the future. But what in any case, it should be part of the discussion for sure. Yeah. And, I think the other thing, A, we're not on the test, and B, I think as cider makers, I know I've been guilty of this. I don't spend enough talking about the benefits, right? I talk about how I make it and it's super cool and the origin story and all this kind of stuff and ice cider and dry cider, da, da, da. But, think about it, right? Here's this alcoholic beverage, which grows great with all kinds of foods. It is half the alcohol of wine. And so it's half the calories of wine if it's dry cider versus a dry wine. And it doesn't have all the heaviness of beer, doesn't have gluten, doesn't have all the sugars, all that kind of stuff. So you've got this, you can't say cider's healthy because it's got alcohol and that's a toxin. We all know that. But if you're going to drink, I love the fact that I can take my husband and I can share a whole 750 ml bottle of cider with dinner, and we're not in a wine coma at the end of it. And we don't feel heavy and like we've had too much calories to drink. And we don't, you know, the great thing about CiderCon is like everybody's drinking way until the night, but nobody wakes up with a hangover because we're all drinking cider. It's good.
You know, you list all those benefits, and I'm going to throw one more in this. I always feel slimmer after I have cider. And I think I say that, and, you know, they say, well, you should drink, you know, for apple cider vinegar, because that there's some healthy properties to that. And I don't know if anybody's done the testing, but, you know, we certainly can't say that it's a slimming beverage, but.
Yeah, that ethanol gets you every time.
Yeah. But I just find that, to your point, if I drink other, adult beverages, I feel that bloated sense. I just don't feel comfortable. And yes, I can drink and share all these different ciders, like for the bottle share. And I'm like, wow, did I even drink anything? From a standpoint that I don't feel like I'm sloshing around with all this stuff in me. Right. Yeah. So that should be on a bumper sticker. I'm not sloshing around. So that's well, since we talked about this, let's taste some cider, because I'm excited to have you share, you know, for your idea and what you wanted this to be. Let's talk some cider now. We have the Peak Bloom. We have the Deep Cut. We have this beautiful Eden bottle with this wonderful, this pastel artwork. And we have the Vermont, the Ice Cider. And I'm really surprised when this came in that I actually saw this bottle, because Dawn, I assumed, was just going to hoard it and say, no, we only got three. That's all we got. I was expecting. She was nice to share. So where should we start? Pardon the interruption. If you like what you hear, if you love what you're hearing, please share the podcast. Please take a screenshot of the podcast, post it on your social media, tag us, just to let everybody else know about Fermented Adventure, the podcast. We'd be grateful for your help to grow our podcast.
So so you have Deep Cut, Peak Bloom, the, which, did I send you a 7? Oh, yeah, that one. We should start with that one.
Okay, we'll start with that one.
Yeah.
The beauty of it is, one of the things we do and try to do with our interviews is, we don't try anything until the part of the interview, because this way I don't have this preconceived idea or anything else. And then I get to make these wonderful opening sounds.
So what you're opening is one of our new lines of bottled. We have a new lineup of bottled ciders, and actually Michael Kaiser and the awesome people at Good Beer Hunting Feel Good Studios did these new labels for us, which we're super excited about. And this is the one in the line that is always the experimental one. So you'll notice it says Farm Study, right? So this Farm Study is single variety Beldebiscoop, which is a Dutch origin apple that actually became very popular in Normandy and Brittany for cider. It's not a tannic apple. It has just wonderful fruit qualities to it and lively acidity. And in this cider, we fermented it to dry. We aged it in some big old French oak puncheons for a while. So like lots of used oak, you know, not a lot of oak contact because it's a bigger barrel, and used, not new. And then we bottle conditioned it in the bottle. And the sugar source for the secondary fermentation is a little bit of our ice cider.
There is such a story in this bottle. The nose, I feel like it's like this farmhouse. You get the yeasty, you get the...
Yeah, even, it's even not disgorged. It's got yeast sediment in it.
There's mustiness to it. You get the acidity on the nose. You get the brightness. There are citrus qualities to this, but there's also this clean apple, this clean, crisp apple note to this that I'm still getting. There's so many bubbles right now rushing to the surface. Just so happy to be out and to be shared with the world. The color is just beautiful as well. It looks like lemon meringue pie that with you get everything that's foaming on the top.
Right. And it's the meringue is the foam on the top, yeah. And then the light yellow underneath. Yeah.
Yeah. This is gorgeous.
That's a great.
I'm glad we had this experience now. So that's just the nose. And talk about these experimental varieties or varietals you're doing. Talk about the thought process that goes into that.
So it's you know, we have the great privilege of working with a lot of different varieties because of the orchards in Vermont that are our partners. And Beldebus Scoop comes from Scott Farm, which is one of our oldest partners. We started working with them back at the beginning in 2007. And, you know, they have 120 varieties. And I mentioned Brad, who has 80 varieties. So it really depends. And, you know, apples are biennial, right? So every year, we're never quite sure exactly how much we're going to get of what varieties until they start arriving in October. And then this is the art part of it at the press. We were like, oh my God, look, there's 7 bins of Beldebus Scoop and they look absolutely gorgeous. And we taste them. We're like, oh, this is fantastic. We've got enough to do a single variety. Let's do that. You know, or, you know, love this variety. It's awesome, but we only have this much. We're going to, you know, it's going to have to go into a blend. And how do we do that? We're just put some tannin in that blend and some acid in that blend and some things that have some great aromatics and so forth. And so it's just kind of, I'd like to say that, oh, yes, there's this whole process of evaluation and blah, 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 but it's more like, let's do that.
Sometimes those are the best ways of doing it, though.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what.
Usually we get 1 or 2 really good ones like this one. So
I'll tell you what, the flavor profile on this is so complex. And you get this dry, the tannic nature of it from the oak. Again, I get the acidity on here. It's so clean. And in my head, I'm thinking, like, I don't always like to say, all right, you can pair this with cheese, right? Because I think that's cliche in a way, although in Vermont, you want to pair everything with cheese, I would imagine.
Yeah. And pretty much any cheese and cider goes well. So,
but I'm thinking, you know, look, I'm trying to, like, I feel like this is something that would go along with something gamey and it would stand up very well to some of those gamey natures of either meats or fowl, something like that, or even pungent vegetables or something that would come through like that.
Yeah, that would spicy eggplant.
All right, let's make that. This is so enjoyable. And so is this one of the, you know, one of the bottles or one of the items that you mentioned there's only a limited release of this. So you have a cider club or you have a way to ship outside of Vermont. Is this something that you would include in that, or is this something you would need to come to the tasting room for and say, listen, this is a limited allocation and come here and this is what you're going to find?
So actually this is one for broader distribution. Like, we're going to have one of these always available, a farm study always available for broader distribution, because we want to get more people outside of our world to experience this. But you're right. In a lot of cases, we're making small batch things that are going for our cider club or available directly from our website, because very few people make it up to our tasting room. We are not near anything. So we do have a pretty robust e-commerce platform.
I'm trying to see what the ABV is on this, because
it's
doesn't
7.5.
Yeah, there's not a lot here. And I think one of the things, again, I don't already feel like all that has gone to my head. And I just feel like I get to really enjoy those apple notes, the yeast notes that are still coming from this bottle conditioning and all that you're doing and the oakiness. I could just sit out here and just sip this and enjoy this and share this with friends. And each sip and how this changes, you could just have a whole conversation from this bottle. This is a good one.
This is the kind of stuff that is, you know, really turns me on. This is what I love to do.
I'm glad you do, because, you know, this is a wonderful treat. So this is great. When you start to plan out, as you start to think about, you touched on, look, you've got this wonderful terroir in Vermont. And is there a sense that you have a personality, or is there something to say, this is the characteristic or personality that is Eden cider?
Yeah. You know, if you look at our website, we make a ton of different styles of cider, right? We have cans, we have bottles, we have ice ciders. We do crazy aperitifs under the brand of Orleans. You know, we hope for everybody, there'll be something that's in the style that they like. But the through theme of all of it is wanting to express the qualities of these amazing apples. We spend so much money and time supporting these small orchards and sourcing these apples and deciding what to do with them. You know, it's not just like we've got three recipes we're banging out every 4 weeks, right? And it's for that reason, we really try, even though we do a lot of ciders that are totally natural, like spontaneous fermentation, and others that are very, very light hand, maybe a little bit of pitched yeast and maybe a few little bit of sulfite, but you know, not a bunch of enzymes and things out of a bag from Scott Lab and all that kind of stuff. But we're super careful because what we don't want is acidification. We're not a fan of Brettanomyces in cider. Every once in a while we have malolactic. We don't really like it that much. You know, we really want you to taste the apple, right? Malic acid is apple acid, malus, right? Like, don't get rid of that. That's what makes an apple taste like an apple. So, yeah.
This is,
so
I love that. I love the geeky part of the podcast. I really do, because that's how people learn. There are people going, malic acid. Now you just, you know, kind of described a little bit more about what that is. And they become, again, you now can connect more to the cider. If you're interested in learning more, this is what happens when you talk cider. You learn stuff. And I'm grateful that I benefit from that. And again, you talk about the flavor of the apple. So I don't know what this specific apple variety is like to bite into it, but I do get some bitterness of the apple. This is not an eating apple. This is a cider apple, I would venture to say, right?
No, it's a...
See, I'm wrong. Good.
Yeah, you know, to the extent that you have some tannin and bitterness, that's probably more from the oak than from the apple.
Okay.
Because this apple is about acid and about aroma and flavor. It's not about tannin. I mean, there are miles between this and something like a Davinet or your Arlington Mill. It's a Belle de Biscoop. It's got a lot of wonderful, like, orange, citrus, bright. I mean, I think, you know, when I think Andy Brennan at Aaron Burr Cidery, he's an artist. And so he does this whole color thing, like how to talk about flavors of cider in terms of colors. And I kind of agree with him on that. Like, this is a yellow orange apple to me. It's not dark red. It's just got a lot of wonderful, like, stone fruit and citrus kinds of quality to it.
Just from this brief part of our conversation, when I drink cider with people, first thing I'm going to start to think about, what color do I see? But I'm going to start asking people, what color do you see? And we'll work through that. And I'm going to say, listen, this is how it works. Eleanor shared this with me because she's had somebody share this with her.
Well, you should get Andy on the podcast and have okay. him give you the whole thing, because I was a pale representation of what he does. So
I would love that, but it gave me a full sense. I have a question, because this is an interesting conversation. I don't like refrigerating my cider. I don't like even refrigerating beer and things. I like drinking it closer to room temperature. As a cider maker,
you can taste the flavor. Yeah.
But people want to, and it's because of what we're used to with wine, people want to rush it to a refrigerator or keep it at a certain temperature before they drink it. What's your perspective on that?
So I agree with you. I think you taste the flavors more when it's not too cold. I think a lot of people who come at cider from the beer world think it's like beer and it needs to be refrigerated or it will go bad. When actually cider is, you know, more like wine and it's a little more stable. A lot of people in the wine world would say we tend in the U.S. to serve white wines too cold and red wines too warm. You know, things are really good at like 58.
Okay. I'm not going to create this moving bath of 58. And that's where I'm going right. to keep everything in.
Put it all at 58.
58. Okay. Which one should we try next? Deep cut, pink?
So we should go to deep cut. This is another 0 grams of residual sugar cider, but it's made from a completely different point of view. So this is a can, right? But so the first one you had was fancy bottle. We sell that for $28 for 750 ml.
Which isn't, I'll tell you what, for what you just put in that bottle, I mean, I'm not here to raise the prices on other people, but that is extremely reasonable for the talent of cider, the quality of cider. This is the thing, you know, we talk, when you start looking at cider and the artistic talent of what goes into that bottle and the label and everything else, I'm like, $28, that's a wonderful price point for something like that.
Thank you. Thank you. We think it's a good value.
I think it's a great value. It really is.
But the cans obviously have to compete at a whole different price point. And so they are like 80, the deep cut is like 70, between 70 and 75% Macintosh and Empire, Vermont, you know, it's our Macintosh is our Vermont state fruit. The key thing about it is you need to press it like before January, because it does, if you've ever tried to eat a Macintosh apple after January, it gets kind of loses its stuff. But if you press it right in the fall when it's got all its aromatic and beautiful acidity to it, Macintosh has wonderful flavor. And then it has some tannic apple varieties blended into it. And it's unfiltered. Because things that are totally dry, especially if they're made quickly, you tend to get like this very narrow acid and not much else. The other thing about this is it's aged. The tannic cider that goes into this is aged at least a year. And that's really what gives it a rounder, more fruity character, even though it's totally dry.
What is this aged on or aged in? Is it just
stainless steel?
Just the stainless steel.
Yeah.
So you're really just letting everything kind of marry and let and fall out and just relax yeah. and rest.
I mean,
right?
There's a reason traditionally why wine takes 2 to 3 years before you release it, because things need to just, the evolution of the fruit character comes out over time. And that's true. Like the more acid and more tannin you have, the more time you need to let that happen. So we've got Macintosh and Empire, but then it's got, you know, 30% of this, you know, wonderful secret sauce stuff that gets blended in. So
wonderful secret sauce stuff.
Yeah, that's our technical term. So you have this totally dry cider in a can at a pretty affordable price that is really nice and fruity. And there've been like Untappd reviews of like, there's totally residual sugar in this. They're lying. I'm like, no, there isn't.
All right. So the overture to what this is on the nose is juicy and butterscotch
yeah.
to me. And those butterscotch candies that you get is what is just filling my nose and the back. I'm salivating on all of this just coming off the nose. And I'm thinking to myself, if you think in your head a butterscotch candy, you're expecting that sweetness. So I haven't tasted this yet. But that's just what's there. That's what's filling my head right now. So I'm going to taste it and see what happens. All right, Eleanor, the first thing I'm going to do after we stop the podcast, I'm going on Untappd and I'm going to say, I can't believe there's no sugar in here. So no, this, all right. It's tart. It's acidic. But you still get, honestly, you still get that butterscotch on the mouth, on the taste, on the flavor. It's still there. And I feel like there's those skins that are coming into play in the finish as well. Wow. There is sugar in here, right? You can tell me.
No. But hopefully you're getting like apple character in a more rounded way than sort of a typical dry cider. You know, it's not just like a narrow point of acidity.
No, not at all. And again, what is again, and I consider, like, I don't know what the heck I'm talking about, really. I'm learning. Yeah, I'm learning to know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The more I learn to know what I'm talking about, the more I can enjoy this more. And there's this, the wave of different things that are happening as you sip this, as your palate becomes acclimated to this and the new things that come through here. Again, this is delicious. So this is something that somebody that they can order. It comes in a 4-pack, a 6-pack,
4-pack, yeah.
4-pack. So they can order this and have it directly shipped to their front door and begin.
Yeah, or hopefully find it in a store near you.
All right. So that brings up a good point. We're in Pennsylvania. Where do you ship to? What are some of those avenues of stores where people can find you?
So this is in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
In a few places, we have the cans are distributed through 31st and Wharton. And there are a few like really good craft beer places that have picked it up. I think it might also be going to, places like DeBruno's.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The cheese people.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
There you go. If you're in Philadelphia and you got the Bruno Brothers, pick up some cheese.
Go ask him for Eden Ciders.
Ask him for Eden Ciders. Exactly. Even the effervescence, the little bubbles that are still dancing around your mouth and your tongue on this that are almost like, what are those pop rock candies? But when they explode, you get this explosion of this apple essence, effervescence, all that stuff's going on here. Do you find, you're doing bottles, you're doing cans, how is that, how do you decide what goes into a can, what goes into a bottle, how you're going to ship it out to the consumer?
I mean, the bottles, the cans for us, so we never did cans until we were just starting to experiment with them before the pandemic. And when the pandemic hit, we had our whole model was through bottles through distribution to restaurants. And so everything just shut down and we were like, oh my God, we need to get something in cans for retail really fast. And when we got CARES program money, that's what we did. And it's based, the cans basically saved the company. And the theory for us about going into cans was the only way we can make a can at a price point that's affordable on the shelf relative to other cans is by using a high percentage of Macintosh and Empire, because those are much less expensive. But we still want to make it Eden with, some of these really cool varieties and, aging it so you get fruit character. So this is not, nothing is like a 5 week cycle. There might be parts of it that are 2 months, but there might be other parts that are 12 to 14 months. So you get that flavor. So that our whole point was we want to put cider in cans that's not taking the fancy stuff in the bottle that you tasted and putting it in a can, because that doesn't work for anybody. And we want it to be a cider that people who are used to drinking cider in cans wouldn't feel was so far out of the range of their experience, but might make them think, oh, this tastes a little different and I really like the fruity quality of it, and let me find out more about Eden. So that's the theory of the cake.
No, I appreciate how I appreciate how you talk about the economy of scale, right? Yeah. That you and great for what you guys did to pivot during those early times of the pandemic to make sure that the lights are on and you still have the ability to conduct business, not as usual, but work through
but
the
some
pandemic,
business
right? Yeah, and right. And now do you feel like you've come out you've dealt with your challenges? There's still glass costs and aluminum costs and all those costs, but do you feel like some of that now you've come out a little bit smarter, a little bit stronger, a little bit more leaner in a way, more focused, or is none of that so and you're just happy to be here?
Well, I feel like we're coming out with every experience is a learning experience. So I guess I feel smarter. I feel like I've learned more. The wrench, actually this past year has been as much of a wrench back as the pandemic was a wrench into, because consumer behavior has gone back. Right. So, our e-commerce business was the other thing that saved us, right? Is we had a pretty robust platform. And then when the pandemic hit and everybody was sitting with CARES money at home shopping online, our business went dramatically up. And foolishly, we were like, great, we're going to take this and run with it. And of course, everybody's going out and not sitting at home and CARES program money isn't coming out anymore. So our e-commerce business has gone like this. For some people, e-commerce is a small proportion of their business. For us, it's a big proportion. So that up and down has been really hard to adjust to. And yes, our tap room our tasting room is up 100% over last year, but for most people, that was a big part of the business. For us, it's a teeny part of the business. It doesn't really help.
So right now you're focusing, if you look at moving forward in 2023, you're focusing on your e-commerce, growing that platform, more distribution to get into more areas, more states. As you become familiar with, this is the beauty of, I think, where cider is right now, the recognizable part of the names that you're seeing. And you go, oh, I've heard of that, or I had that at a friend's house, or I heard that on a podcast. I know that name. that I want to pick up a bottle, or I want to pick up and drink more of what they have so I can experience it for myself. And I think that's probably, you know, where you're seeing your growth potential in 2023. Yes.
Yeah, that's definitely it. And this new line of bottles. So the other thing that I think is definitely happening is the convergence around at the bottle end of things with natural wine and co-ferments. And, you know, it perhaps started with, or at least got a lot more attention with all of the wildfires in the West where the grapes were problematic. And we had all these winemakers who were like, I don't have any grapes to work with. Like, oh, look, they're apples and they're plums and let's ferment those. So like the starting with the winemakers saying, oh, you know, there are other fruits that ferment that can make interesting beverages, and then putting them with wine. And we've had done some fun things. We've done some co-ferments, and actually we're just about to release a specialty can that is fermented over Vermont Riesling grape skins. So that's fun.
All right. Put me down on whatever list, so, you know, wherever. Yeah. Oh, that sounds awesome. See, this is the beauty of this, the creativity, all the things that can be done now.
Yeah. So like all the old barriers are all broken down. Young people are adventurous drinkers. They drink across categories. They want to try something new. Nobody has to be hidebound by like, oh, this is the rule. You have to do a single variety. Da 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 da. Has to be made this way in this kind of label. Like, can just do what's interesting and what makes sense for you and your, you know, what's around you and what's growing around you. And so we're also like this new, that Belle de Biscoop, right? That's, if you look on the side where it says, not the side with the words, but the side with the government stuff on it.
Right. The little
tax
thing.
Class says, it says dry sparkling cider wine. So we're like, I'm just going to go there because I just want people to understand that this is how you should think of it.
I'm glad you went there because this is the direction that you're the producer. You know, you are the songwriter. We're just going to listen to the song, but we're going to learn and enjoy and listen to what you're producing. And I think that if you start to change the terminology, or you introduce different terminology, how do I associate that? What's my connection with that? Right. That you direct and lead the consumer. So I think that's very bold and adventurous. I really do.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Okay. Now I opened this Peak Bloom and I get so much fruitiness on the nose, like strawberries.
This was the original can. This is meant to be like just what hard cider should be, with a little bit of residual sweetness, and just better. It's
berry notes, fruity notes, floral notes, just honey on the nose. All that is coming through there.
Yeah.
And so then you're going to tell me there's no sugar in there and I'm about to go back.
No, there is. There's four, it says right on the can, 4 grams, 4 grams per can. And it comes because we make a special ice cider just for this that we blend in. So there's no added sugar. It's just all from the apple.
This is just delicious. It really,
it's what you want hard cider to be.
No, but it, all right. Can I beg to differ? This is not just what I want hard cider to be. Because it's like saying, if I just drink IPAs, this is just what I want beer to be, right? But this is what I want the varieties of what I get to drink to be. Like, you go to a winery, as you pointed out, you can get sweet wines, you can get dry wines, you can get semi-sweet, you can get, you know, different kinds of sparkling wines, right? Mm-hmm. I want it to be all there. And this is... These are three perfect examples. And that's why we say, what tells the Eden story? What really gives people that sense of these are the quality ciders that are coming out of Eden? This to me, look, take this to the beach, take it, you know, this is, you could just drink this and go to the barbecue or open up this, you know, at the end of the day. There's so many ways to drink this, or, you know, you could make a nice dinner. And just, you relax in front of the TV, watch a movie with this. This is, but they're all that way. I'll open up a bottle of this one and this beautiful bottle, and which is the yellow orange cider. This is the, this one's the, I get some blues in this one. I get some greens in this one, you know, so different kinds of colors that we're drinking right now. But this is wonderful. Again, I think what comes out of this one is you just drink it. You don't have to describe it. You just drink it. Would that be your thought about what hard cider should be? Just drink it. Don't spend too much time analyzing like I'm doing.
I think in the case of, I think canned cider should be excellent and approachable and easy. And then when you want to really when you want to really create something wonderful on your plate to eat, when you really want to have something interesting that elevates the experience, then you can go for the crazy bottles.
I'm just going to keep just enjoying this as I enjoy them all. All right.
Well, I got to give a shout out to Pete Bresnahan, who's our cider maker, right? Because he's doing all the work that's making this good.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you for all your hard work and efforts. And eventually you'll get released. You'll get that anklet removed so you can leave Vermont or something, right? This is wonderful. Now, all right, we saved your ice cider here. I'm curious, how did you come up with the name Eden?
Oh, my God. It was available.
Okay.
Right? Which is awesome. The Garden of and the Apple.
Gotcha.
And it's I mentioned my husband's French Canadian. So all of the names in our family have to be spelled the same in French as they are in English. Our kids, our cidery, just true of Eden. And then, as somebody who has been in business, you want a name that is easy for people to spell, easy to remember, easy to Google. And so that was Eden.
That was Eden. And when you started, more names were available and it was there.
Yeah, because there were only 85 cideries in the U.S. when we started.
This is the brand that launched the franchise, right? This is the cider that launched the franchise.
Yes, that's the flagship, yeah.
This is
heirloom blend ice cider.
Yeah. Yep. So what are the heirloom blends that are in here?
So there's a lot of Roxbury Russet, Golden Russet, Hudson's Golden Gem are sort of the sweet aromatic components. There's a lot of Asopus Spitzenberg. There's some Cabo Blanc that give you nice acidity. And then there's a whole bunch of smaller things. There's some Ashridge Kernel. There's some Blue Pearmain. There's Orleans Renette. I can keep going. There's Black Oxford. So it's a lot of North American and New England, in particular, heirloom varieties, Northeast. But then some, occasionally some interesting European culinary apples. A lot of the varieties come from Scott Farm. And then there are a few that come from our orchard and from Windfall Orchard and from Poverty Lane.
How did you decide, or how do you decide to just keep throwing all those apples into the pie?
Oh, well, this is the original one, right? So this was when I was thinking we should make some of this in our basement and see what it's like. And I mentioned I was unemployed and I had too much time on my hands. So that let's make something in our basement became the project where I went and visited all kinds of orchards and learned all about apple varieties. And I talked my way into the advanced cider making course with Peter Mitchell at Cornell. And I got 200 5-gallon plastic carboys from the manufacturer directly in a, tractor trailer, came up the dirt road to deliver them. And I ended up buying 36 different varieties of apples to try. I pressed them all separately. I froze them all, juiced separately. I concentrated them all separately, fermented them, and then blended from there. It was just an incredible amount of work. And we've never done that much work since. I probably won't ever do it again, but that's how it came up with this blend. It's never exactly the same from year to year, again, because of biennialism, but the sort of the main components are pretty much in balance. Yeah.
I'm curious for what you've been able to produce over the years. Is there still a bottle that exists from your first inception?
I think there are three, maybe four.
Are they special occasion bottles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, when we had our 10th anniversary celebration in 2018, we did a vertical tasting from 2008, 2009, all the way through. And our cider club members, we've had some like library sales where they've been able to buy some of the library bottles. And we still have a few, but I think there are only three left from 2007.
I'm trying to imagine. I mean, this is just tremendously delicious. This is just, they're all wonderful. All your children are well behaved. So thank you for bringing them today. But it's just like just an experience like you can have that you'll, that's a once in a lifetime thing. I think that you kind of experience. And this is why I would understand how this launched everything for you to say, we tried this. This is cool. Let's make some. Wow, we can do this. To really honing and dialing in on this is such a wonderful experience. I wonder, like I said, you know, as these things come together and you have this age in the bottle, I'm curious as to how that, what changes, what grows from the flavor profiles. Have you, and if you did, I apologize, but has this been barrel aged at all?
So we do a version of the heirloom blend that is aged in apple brandy barrels. You can find that on our website too. And that's kind of fun because it adds a whole different little dimension to it. It's like a little more caramelly, little bit of booziness to it. And then there are other ice ciders that we've barrel aged. Probably the most memorable is the Shakespearean series. Which started, the first one was Falstaff. And that started because when we were blending in 2008, the second year, we were blending things into a tank and we had a little bit more we couldn't fit into the tank. And we were like, oh, we happen to have a barrel. Let's just put it in the barrel. We'll just leave it there.
Here's a vessel.
and we sort of stuck it over in the corner and forgot about it. And other things got put in front of it. And every once in a while, my husband would say, well, I want to put something in the barrel. Can I empty that? And I'd be like, no. Let's get another barrel. And finally, after 5 or 6 years, we started tasting it. We're like, oh, this is turning into something wholly different. And then people would come up to visit distributors and they're like, you have to bottle that. So finally, after 8 years in the barrel, we bottled it. And it's a whole nother planet in terms of, you know, it's dark. It's got notes of apricot and walnuts and golden raisin and fig. And it's really unctuous. And it still has acidity for that balance, right? I mean, the thing that makes a sweet wine successful is when you have a backbone of acidity for balance, because otherwise it's just that. I think the Falstaff that we make is probably the most expensive cider in the world. We sell a half bottle for $55.
Did you say that again?
We sell a half bottle, you know, this 375 ml bottle for $55.
Sounds like a bargain to me.
There's usually like six to 800 bottles. That's it.
Okay. Sounds like a bargain to me based on what you're producing there. This, you know, there's so much as you talk about, and I think that's, when I say, you know, what are some of the characteristics that when you say, all right, this is an Eden cider, this brightness, this acidity, this juiciness, these apple flavors that don't get lost. And I would say what's coming out of the cider world that is maturing are ciders that we've had them. You taste it and go, is this really a cider? Either they've been over-sweetened in a way, artificially flavored in a way, and sometimes the apple gets totally lost. The apples are here. The flavor, the complexity, they're all here. This ice cider is unlike anything we continue to have. So it's very unique to you and Eden Cider, and it's just a treat. If people want to order direct and have them, you know, these bottles and this wonderful things come to their house, where do they go to order this?
EdenCiders.com.
That's pretty simple. And right now you said you had a foot of snow, right?
Yeah.
When does the tasting room actually open?
So we're open now,
right now.
Fridays, just Fridays and Saturdays.
All right,
and
bring your snowshoes. Bring your snowmobiles.
Yeah, quickly, because in about 3 weeks, it's just going to be mud and you should bring your galoshes. Best time to visit is July and August. Absolutely gorgeous. And then foliage, which is like September, late September, early October, when the trees are just like tapestries of flame. It's gorgeous.
Where do you see the future? Or, you know, this is, I always say, this is my job interview question. You know, where do you see yourself in 5 years? What are some of the planning out of what you like to do with Edensite, or some, you know, maybe some of the secrets you're not telling people other than Fermented Adventure about that, what you're working on?
I think I will be really happy if we have cracked the nut on why cider among the trade, and people are like, get really interested in having a serious cider section on their drink menu. And then if they do some exploring, they'll find us, and our business will grow as a result. That's kind of what I'm hoping.
I really appreciate that. And I think that that's almost like a panel discussion. And I know it's been touched on from the different, we've been blessed to go to the last couple of cider cons. I think it's been touched on. Do you think in a way, and I don't mean to, you've been very generous with your time, but do you think in a way that it's almost going to be that, all right, we need to really have a serious conversation about how we do this versus dancing around the edges?
About how we approach the issue of why cider?
Yeah. You know, it's almost like I'm having that picture in my head. I'm having that picture of where you see Al Capone in that movie where he brings all the families around and he's got the baseball bat. And he's almost, you know, is it almost that baseball bat time for cider?
I don't think a baseball bat is ever convincing in a really, truly meaningful way. It can be convincing in a moment when you're scared, but yeah, I think coordinated, concerted effort. Yes. And I know Michelle's working really hard on things that are, you know, going to help that. So
I think that, like I said, I mean, I know I say this and I echo this so many times. We as for Dawn and I, as a consumer, we're the benefit of this. The more we can go into a restaurant, or the more we can go into, you know, even something like De Bruyne Brothers, which is a specialty cheese store, and see Eden there and know that we have access to that. That's wonderful. And then the consumer goes, wait a second, I don't have to have wine. I can have cider. Oh, let's try that. And then they're bringing their friends over, and
yeah, or they're asking like, why is this cider? You've got cider on your menu. Like what do I want to know about this? And that the server actually understands and has tasted it and can explain it would be amazing. That'd be great. I liken this moment to when I'm going to date myself. When I first got out of college, the first project I worked on was for Guinness. And every Friday night you'd have to go out and, you know, taste the competition.
It's a horrible job you had there.
It was terrible. Ellen. Yeah. Well, the work was great, but the Friday nights were okay. But you'd go into, like, you could go to a fancy steakhouse in Boston, and everybody was all excited about European wine, right? Because finally we graduated on from Matus Rosé and Suave Bola to like real wine. And they'd be like, oh yeah, I have a beer on the menu. I have a Heineken. It's like, beer, I know I have to have it, and some people want to drink it, but, you know, and I'll pick an import because that's sort of fancy. And I feel like cider is still stuck there. Like, they've got really interesting wines from all over the world. They've got a really carefully curated beer section now. And then there's like, oh yeah, I have a cider. We're fine. We have a cider. It's like, that should be embarrassing.
You know, one of the, we talked about this on so many levels. So it's the consumer's knowledge and interest in cider. It's the communicator, the establishment's knowledge and awareness of cider. But the most important thing, I think, is that the beer industry grew up and graduated from, we do have Heineken. So we got a beer on the menu, right?
Yeah.
So there's hope, there's promise. So that where do you want to see yourself in 5 years is you are part of that conversation. Yeah. And what really opens the door to so much is somebody saying, when they see a cider menu, oh, they've eaten. Oh, look at that. Cool. Or can you tell me more about this? I haven't had this Eden yet. Can you tell me more? And then that person can communicate because they've been they've appreciated what's in that too. So I think there's promise there. I think there's a lot of hope there. and just really, really genuinely appreciate what you're doing. Is there anything we haven't talked about today with our time about on the podcast about you or the or Eden Cider or the American Cider Association? You wear so many hats. When you get out of bed, what do you
do? What do you do?
Like, where am I going today?
No, I it's an honor to be the board president of the ACA, but Michelle McGrath, our executive director, she does all the work. My job is to make keep Michelle happy. That's all I got to do.
Okay.
And she's does a remarkably good job at keeping herself happy. So it's super easy.
That's awesome. That, I mean, this is like, this has been a treat. I say this, I'm grateful for your time today. We had not had an opportunity to really talk. You're like this vapor trail. There's Michelle. Oh, I'm sorry. There's Eleanor, you know, and, you know, you're here, you're leading a panel, you're up there, you're talking on the stage over here, you're drinking, you're talking to somebody. So you've got so many things going on, and I'm grateful for this time. I'm grateful for this opportunity to share Eden.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This has been awesome. So thank you for being a friend of Fermented Adventure. We will make it up to Vermont. We'll bring our mud shoes and or come when it's beautiful in July or August, one of these times, and just sit down with you and Albert and Peter and just enjoy your cider.
Great. And we'd love to, if you are making a trip, we'd love to connect you with some other awesome fermenting places. There's some great natural winemakers up here and, you know, doing things, cool things with hybrid grapes and all kinds of stuff. And there's,
Eleanor is also in charge of the Vermont tourism industry and all that too.
No. Thanks, Rich. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Eleanor. Cheers.